Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode here at the Damage Report. A big Thursday show with a big time guest who hasn't been on in what feels like 3 or 4 years. I guess it hasn't been quite that long, but welcome back to the show, Michael Shore.
It's so good to be back on the Damage Report. You know, John, it hasn't been 3 or 4 years. It seems like it to me, though. And I, you know, I was telling you guys before we started, it just feels so good to be back with you guys. It's coming home. So I've ended my isolation.
You have. By the way, I see the chat and Somnia Noir says, Michael! Wow. Blue Lizard Girl says, yay, Michael! That's awesome. No, we're glad to have you back. So we did the power panel together last Friday. And I mentioned to people, like, you never know what percentage of the audience has been watching for more than a month or more than a year or whatever. So if they've only been watching for like a year, they might not be that familiar with you on the network, but obviously you've been on the network as long as there's been a network. So it is very much you coming home. So I'm glad you're here.
One day later than there's been a network. I started on day two. So
was it really?
Yeah, it was in Cenk's apartment back in, I guess it was, I want to say 2001. Is that 2002? No, 2002, I think.
Apartments in 2001?
They had apartments back then, yeah. You wouldn't believe it, John. And
Always felt kind of left behind by not being there for that first big day?
Yeah, they filled me in on what happened. I still feel like the new guy. That's really what it is.
Someday you'll catch up. But anyway, we're glad to have you here. So you've been off working. Like, so what has the experience been like covering, you know, the last wave of the pandemic, the one we're launching into, an insurrection, an inauguration, and not doing any, not being on TYT. So what was that experience like?
It was obviously a unique year. And when you do this and you want to cover stories and talk about what's going on in the country, it's a privilege to do it. But you have to do it in harrowing places. So I was inside COVID wards in the middle of the pandemic, and I was, on the road covering the election. I thought I had the lead on January 6th because I was in Georgia. On January 6th, and I was going to be the A block, which is news. In news means you're telling the top story. It's because John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock both were declared winners. The Democrats took the Senate, and that was the end of that. So I wasn't in D.C. I was at the inauguration, and I've been out there covering it. It's been great. I miss talking about it, but I'm happy to be, for the rest of time, be able to say that during the pandemic, during that unusual election, I was out there covering it.
Yeah. I honestly can't imagine. I've gone outside like 3 times. But we're very glad to have you here. Had to lend your
6 people once, and that was really crazy. I mean, the airports were amazing, and you're so happy to see more people back in the airports. But there's a little part of you that's like, oh, it was so great when no one was in the airport.
Yeah. Well, it's been a long time since I've flown, but we'll see. I'm supposed to go to a convention next month. We'll see about that. But anyway, we're glad to have you here to once again lend your expertise and your knowledge to us as we go through the news, which we will be doing over the next 80 or so minutes. We're going to be diving into Afghanistan, vaccine mandates, the right's weird crush on the Taliban, as well as what's going on in schools, parents fighting back against virtually any effort taken to protect their kids from dying a needless death, and a lot of other stuff besides. And along the way, if you have any thoughts or questions about these topics, you can send us tweets, super chats, comment on Twitch, all of that, and we'll be responding during our breaks. By the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. Helps people know that the stream is live. But with all that said, Michael, are you ready to launch into this thing?
Let's do it.
Okay. Oh, early heads up, by the way, if you stick around to the end of the show, I do have 2 dogs running around the studio audience, so maybe I can fetch one. I know that there's been a call for that, so we might have that coming up. But anyway, with that said, why don't we launch directly into this first video?
We're gonna go back in hindsight and look, but the idea that somehow there's a way to have gotten out without chaos ensuing, I don't know how that happens.
So there you have President Biden during his interview, I believe it was just yesterday, with George Stephanopoulos, where he was asked a lot of questions about the current state of things in Afghanistan, the chaos that has unfolded over the last 3 to 4 days. And what you saw there, saying there was going to be chaos no matter what, seems to me at least, on some level, to definitely be true. But it was also a great example of Biden's, I think, fairly characteristic defiance to questions like that. I don't necessarily disagree to some extent, but he has so far not really expressed even like the understanding that perhaps something could have been different. Perhaps they could have gotten more people out in the months leading up to it. But in any event, Michael, what do you think about what he said there, his reaction to the overall situation?
You know, I think that in cases like this, defiance, if you want to call it that way, I don't know that it's defiance, but it's sort of, it's owning it is important. If American lives have not been lost in the ensuing chaos that's going on in Afghanistan, for the president to own that position, any president, is probably the best course. If I was in the White House advising Joe Biden, you know, when he was going on with George Stephanopoulos, I would say, look, they're going to ask you why this happened this way. They're going to ask you about regrets. They're going to ask you about how this could have been avoided. Own that you did this knowing that this could have happened. So I think in terms of advising a US president, it's important. Look, I don't disagree with Joe Biden. I don't know that you could get out of there without leaving something behind. I also think that in the ensuing days, since those first harrowing days, things have gotten a little bit better from the reports I've read and watched from Afghanistan and from people who comment on and military experts that I, you know, would follow or watch. But it was imperfect. The way to avoid, you know, that sort of situation getting out is often just not to get in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, we've been in there for so long that that was never an option for him. Now, in theory, like, he was involved for 8 years with, you know, President Obama, but not in charge. So it is, we've been talking throughout the week about, you know, where blame can or should be laid. And it's a complex picture, clearly. I don't know. I'm of two minds, really, because I definitely think clearly something in theory could have been done to stop people from literally hanging off of planes and falling to their deaths. The idea that that was inevitable seems to me wrong on multiple levels. But we did know that we were leaving at a certain time. They could have had better intelligence or acted on it a different way. But they couldn't have known for sure that both the government and the military would effectively flee almost instantaneously. Preparations were based on an idea that that would take at the very least weeks, if not longer. So, yeah, I'm interested to see if there's any more nuance added as he does, you know, press conferences and interviews over the next few weeks, or if this is basically what we're gonna get out of the administration. And as you said, it helps a little bit that to some extent the situation seems to be improving, but we're still seeing this morning reports of, you know, people who had been longtime translators coming every day to the gates and being unable to get in. So the rate that they're processing people, even multiple days in, is still far lower than they said they'd be able to do on the first day, far, far lower. And so I think it's understandable that people still have a lot of concerns.
Yeah, it is understandable. And I think that, first of all, it was always going to be imperfect, right? Whether it was manifested by people hanging off of planes or it manifested by people, you know, lying down in the streets, grabbing onto cars, you know, setting fire to things. You don't know how it's going to manifest. Those were shocking, you know, pictures for us to see. And we see so many more pictures now in 2021 than we would have ever seen at any other time in history. And that also has this sort of, you know, cumulative impact when you watch this stuff. But you also, you know, that you're dealing with, I think, and again, I don't want to give the Taliban any real credit here, right? But if you're dealing with a different flavor of Taliban that is, in fact, facilitating more than they would have at other times, that there may be a way to, in a measured way, that we didn't expect to get more people out of there in shorter periods of time. I don't know. I mean, that's total conjecture. I'm not an expert on that. But I do sense, even if it's, you know, it's still horrible, and they are still, you know, working on what their record in the past has been, it does seem like it's a little bit more manageable on the Afghan side than it was before.
Yeah. So let's turn to one of the big points of debate over the past few days. How much does the United States owe to a variety of different groups, people who directly supported the occupation, those who served in the government or in the military or were translators. Beyond that, groups that received a at least greater level of protection over the past two decades, if never a perfect level of protection, that are now potentially going to be exposed to any amount of abuse from the Taliban. What do we actually owe to those people? Everyone seems to disagree. The right wing has been a little bit dismissive of those concerns over the past week. But here is Joe Biden talking about that.
Beyond Americans, what do we owe the Afghans who are left behind, particularly Afghan women, who are facing the prospect of subjugation again?
As many as we can get out, we should. For example, I had a meeting today for a couple hours in the Situation Room just below here. There are Afghan women outside the gate. I told them, get them on the planes, get them out. Get them out, get their families out if you can. But here's the deal, George. The idea that we're able to deal with the rights of women around the world by military force is not rational. Not rational. Look what's happening to the Uyghurs in Western China. Look what's happening in other parts of the world. Look what's happening in the Congo. I mean, there are a lot of places where women are being subjugated. The way to deal with that is not with a military invasion. The way to deal with that is putting economic, diplomatic, and international pressure on them to change their behavior.
Okay, so I largely see that as having two parts. One is immediately, what is our obligation and what should we do? And he said we should get those people out. The other is, I guess, describing some part of the, and you know, I hate using this term again, but a Biden doctrine for military intervention for human rights concerns. Michael, what are some of your immediate thoughts in seeing him articulate that?
First of all, I think it's such a fascinating minute that we just watched, because it is a good question, right? What do we owe these people? But then you're also seeing, we can get to that in a second, but then you're also seeing a president who is taking, he said we shouldn't have gone in there. The way to go in there is not with the military and sort of dictate that way. He's setting himself up for, you just referred to the Biden doctrine. I don't know that I would go that far, but he's creating an opportunity for the Biden administration to make their signature on Afghanistan and other human rights abusers around the country going forward rather than looking backward and having it be reliant upon what they have done. Or not what they have done, but what they are going to do. So it kind of is a pivot point from this, which is, I think, strategically a smart piece of advice he's taking from his advisors and I trust himself as well. Mm-hmm. And going back to the answer, look, I think the obligation you have is enormous. You do as much as you can to help the people that were there, and then going forward diplomatically, even though you're dealing with an unreliable counterpart in Afghanistan and the Taliban, do as much as you can as an international community and as the United States to do what you can to get those people out who need to get out, who helped us and who rely on us for protection.
Yeah. The second part of his answer about, you don't just invade every country that you have a humanitarian concern with, I think is definitely true. It's also not what we've ever really done. Those concerns are often trotted out. I don't necessarily believe that they're actually things that are driving the military intervention, but they're often used. And I definitely don't agree that that can actually work. I think that there are other ways to hopefully influence countries, ways that might seem, that might be, easier, cheaper, and probably more likely to work, while understanding that it's incredibly difficult. Like, I know a lot of Americans are probably incredibly, like, they look at the Taliban and they just wonder why is this still a thing? Like, why is this way of, why is it so hard to get this basic level of respect for things like women having any rights whatsoever, the LGBTQ community and that sort of thing? And it's totally true, but understand, like, I was looking up, there was a poll in 2018 in America, 1 in 5 Americans thought that interracial marriage was immoral. Like, we got a lot of issues there. People who still don't want women to have really any substantive rights here in America. So it is a worldwide cultural concern, not equally distributed across all cultures, but you can't just invade every place that doesn't treat these groups right, or else you'd have to invade quite a few American states as well.
Yeah, of course. And that's what, you know, that's the signature that Biden's trying to put on this is going forward. I think it's smart politics. And, you know, even if I'm skeptical as to how efficient it can be done, efficiently can be done, I think it's, you know, at this point, audible that that's the direction they want to go. But again, I need to see more.
Yeah. And I want to briefly mention, I know we're going to go on for a bit about this, but this is, I think, the most interesting and important and intriguing news today. His first question about, you know, he gave the answer you would want. We got to get him out. We owe them. We got to get them out. Now, I would have follow up questions of exactly which groups he meant there, because it was a broad statement, but he might mean just people with a documented history of working with the regime to benefit our occupation. But he spoke more broadly. He said, especially the women, we got to get them out. And I agree. So how many of them? How many is the Biden administration going to support getting out? And over what time period? Is it that we have a moral obligation to whichever women happened to be close to Kabul as it fell? Like if you were, you know, 3 days travel from the airport, do we not have an obligation to you? If you don't try to flee in the first week, do we not have an obligation to you? I would say that if there's some sort of moral imperative, it shouldn't be so weirdly bounded by space or time. And America certainly has the resources, it has the space, it has the ability and the bureaucracy to get far more people than the numbers will likely come out from the Biden administration. We saw earlier this year, Michael, the overall raising of the refugee cap. So it had been taken down to virtually nothing, effectively nothing under Trump. The Biden administration said they were gonna raise it up, and then they received some pushback and it was lowered. Then thankfully they received some pushback from progressives, so it was raised up back again, but not even to the level that Obama had had it in the latter years of his presidency, which gives me a lot of concern about, he says we gotta get them out, but do we have to get out 5,000, 10,000? What if there are 100,000 refugees that wanna come in? Where is he actually gonna come out when you have a full court press in the right wing media demonizing effectively anyone coming into this country, especially from Afghanistan? How do you see that playing out?
And especially during a pandemic. I mean, that's one of the other things that we sort of forget here, is bringing in thousands of people into the country during COVID, how to process them, how to vaccinate them, how to, where to put them, where to quarantine. There's so many issues. We see it with the southern border, and now we see it, we're gonna see it in a different way with the Afghans who are going to be evacuated from their country. You know, I do think that the president, and I don't think it necessarily was the space to do it in a one-on-one with George Stephanopoulos, where he was not going to go into great detail, nor does he even know the great detail yet, probably. But I do think that it's going to be incumbent on the president to define that, and the administration to define that. And if they don't, they're going to take a lot of heat for it, deservedly, for not defining what it is that, you know, what it is getting, what does refugee mean in Afghanistan? Who is it that can come out? You see the president talking about there are women standing at the fences, get them out. That's a little flip, right? I mean, there are going to be women standing at the fences maybe for decades, hopefully not there in Afghanistan, but going off of the past is any indicator, that's probably not going to get better quickly. So the United States has to define its role. It also has to define its role probably with the United Nations and with other allies in the region. But there's an opportunity here for the Biden administration to do that and do it well.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I want to briefly turn back to something that you mentioned earlier. Will the Taliban this time around be effectively the same Taliban that ruled in the run up to the initial invasion 20 years ago? Well, Joe Biden was asked about that, and here's what he had to say.
What happens now in Afghanistan? Do you believe the Taliban have changed?
No. I think, let me put it this way. I think they're going through sort of an existential crisis about, do they want to be recognized by the international community as being a legitimate government? I'm not sure they do. But look, they have—
They care about their beliefs more.
Well, they do. But they also care about whether they have food to eat, whether they have an income that can make any money and run an economy. They care about whether or not they can hold together the society that they in fact say they care so much about. I'm not counting on any of that. But that is part of what I think is going on right now in terms of, I'm not sure I would have predicted, George, nor would you or anyone else, that when we decided to leave, that they'd provide safe passage for Americans to get out.
Okay, so look, he went on in that answer. There was some nuance. A lot of that nuance has been lost in the online conversation around this, Michael. I don't know if you've seen this, but I cannot believe that this is ABC News. I'm used to these sorts of tweets from like The Hill or whatever. But ABC News tweeted out that video saying, exclusive, George Stephanopoulos, do you believe the Taliban has changed? President Biden, quote, I think they're going through sort of an existential crisis about blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's true, but his first word was no. Like they cut out the no. I'm not gonna count the characters in that tweet, but I feel like they probably could have fit it.
Yeah, they doubled those characters a long time ago.
They did. So that seems like a weird choice that has led to a ton of right-wing attacks of people who did not even watch the video, clearly.
Right. You know, one thing I've learned over the last, I guess, 9 months of not being with the Turks or with another network that was reliant upon a lot of social media is that there's a whole world of people that pay no attention to what's going on Twitter, even though I pay a lot of attention to it. And it's refreshing in a sense to know that. But I do think it's unfortunate that you have whoever is in charge of social at ABC taking the president without putting the no in there, because that was the answer to the question. Again, I don't think it was a bunch of people sitting around a table saying, let's cut out the no. I don't think that's how rooms work. It's somebody in social who released that and let's get this clip out there, and they put it in. Here's, you know, going back to what the president's answer was, is it's interesting because you're talking about the Taliban, but the last time we talked about them in the way that we talked about them was 20 years ago. It was after 9/11. It's when the Congress voted in overwhelming numbers, and the neocons within the Bush administration at that time, the second Bush administration, said, let's go in there. It was in reaction to what had happened on 9/11, being enabled by the Taliban to a great degree. They had to have changed. Everybody's changed. The Republicans have changed in 20 years. The Democrats have changed in 20 years. There's been change that you have people who weren't even alive or who were 5 or 6 years old when the Taliban was last at its most powerful. You'd assume there's change. It doesn't mean it's all for the better either. It could be even worse, but there has to have been change. So I think that the president in saying that is shouldn't cast aspersions on these people. He needs people to get out safely, and he doesn't want to start anything. That answer, I think, was telling.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad that you added that nuance to the end, because I wasn't doing this job back in 2001. I was sort of barely aware of what was going on politically, but it feels like the Republicans have gotten worse in the last two decades. I could be wrong.
No, but that's, of course, I mean, because Trump happened to them, right? I mean, we didn't think that there was anything worse than the neocons at the beginning of this century. And then Trump happened, and then the Republican Party, you know, was empowered by somebody who should not have been president. And so anybody can do it, but again, doesn't always mean it's for the better, but it's always nice to think that it could be for the better. And every indication we've seen right now, 20 years ago, they would not have escorted Americans out of Afghanistan. That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, everybody, in just a moment, we're gonna take a short break. I saw chatter about this in the chat, so I just wanna briefly address. We did briefly talk about the situation with the alleged bomb in DC in the pre-show. The issue is that, at least as far as was available to us before going live, there was very little actual information. And obviously, me personally, it's difficult to follow while we're doing the live show. So we did address it in the pre-show. If there's major breaking news, I'm sure the team will keep me updated on that. As of right now, I haven't seen that. But we are aware that it is going on. That said, we're gonna take our first break, come back with a slightly different domestic angle on what's going on in Afghanistan after this. Over the past few days, the right has had some strange reactions to what's going on in Afghanistan. First of all, attacking the withdrawal in a variety of different forms when supposedly they were fine with it when it was Trump's withdrawal. But a little bit weirder is the stuff that they've had to say about the Taliban specifically. And it's becoming increasingly common across a whole bunch of at least the very public right, when it comes to politicians, when it comes to members of the media. We're gonna go through a few. So first of all, here is what Donald Trump had to say just 2 days ago.
The Taliban, good fighters. I will tell you, good fighters. You have to give them credit for that. They've been fighting for 1,000 years. What they do is they fight.
So first of all, quick fact check. They have not been fighting for 1,000 years. 1,000 years ago was the era of like the Song Dynasty. They were launched. The Taliban's only been around since 1994, which is when the mask came out. They're not that old, dude. But anyway, he really respects how good of fighters they are. Also, they're smart. He said the Taliban has circled the airport, and who knows if they're going to treat us right. All of a sudden, they'll say, "Well, frankly, if they were smart, they'd really." And they are smart. They are smart. They should let the Americans out. Now, maybe that is the art of the deal there, Michael. Maybe that is him trying to encourage them through, like, I don't know, is it reverse psychology? I'm not sure, to let people out. But he does seem to think that they're okay. And look, he last year was saying he looks forward, or it might have been earlier this year. He said he looks forward to the Taliban being in charge so they can hunt down and kill the terrorists. Like, he's been able to find a little bit to like amongst the Taliban. It's about to go broader, but first of all, are you at all surprised by this? I think you know the general topic we're about to get into here.
Yeah, I mean, am I surprised by it? No, I'm not surprised by it. You know, everything is politics, and everything is winning the Senate, winning the House, and making the president look as bad as he can. So Republican-wise, I'm not. I don't like to give, Trump much air. It doesn't matter what he has to say about it. It didn't really matter when he was president. But if you want to go to some of the military leaders who were there when he was president, that's one thing. If you want to go back to other administrations, that's one thing. You don't hear many former presidents talking about this. I think by giving him the space and the air to talk about it, it's kind of a disservice to the conversation anyway.
Okay, then we'll move on from him. I don't want to do a disservice, so we'll move on to the others. On Twitter, supporters of the Capitol Hill riots in Washington posted pictures of American rioters next to images of Taliban fighters inside the presidential palace in Kabul. Now, just to be clear, they're doing that because they like the comparison. Like, one could do that to criticize both. That's not what they're doing. On Telegram, white supremacists openly debated if the Taliban should be considered good guys because of their homophobic views. On 4chan, a message board frequented by the far right, the Taliban's military success was promoted as evidence that Western governments would similarly soon be toppled. And let's go to some of the individuals, because a lot of that is randos, and you never know how representative it is of anything. I don't know these individuals how representative they are, but they do have following. So Nicholas Fuentes, one of the most prominent like white nationalist, white supremacists, said, "The Taliban is going to ban abortion, vaccines, and gay marriage. Maybe we were fighting on the wrong side for 20 years. Paul Joseph Watson, who's one of the, I don't even know if he still is, but formerly one of the Alex Jones people, retweeted a tweet saying, "Walked past Afghan boys dramatically retelling the story of looters taken down by locals of the Taliban. Everywhere you go, people are excitedly talking about how criminals who had been freely terrorizing Kabul for months are finally getting the punishments they deserve. So I guess they're cool with the law and order group, no matter what form that comes in." Seemingly not having a problem with the source of the law, because previously, man, they'd love to demonize Sharia, but I guess they're a little bit better with it. But it does go a little bit more mainstream, regrettably mainstream, with Lauren Boebert tweeting, "The Taliban are the only people building back better." Representative Matt Gaetz tweeted, "Taliban and Trump should both be on Twitter. More legitimate than the last government in Afghanistan or the current government here." So look, they hated everyone in this entire region of the world, from Iran through Afghanistan to the Middle East and all that. Now they're more legitimate than Biden's administration. These are sitting Congress people there. Does it matter at all, Michael?
You know, I don't think it matters. I think at that level on the fringes, it doesn't matter at all. But I do think that if, you know, they're very good at the anti message. So anything that could in any way hurt Joe Biden and prevent them from being more powerful, or accelerate them being more powerful, they're going to resort to. But I don't think that the narrative is sort of established by the Lauren Boeberts on Capitol Hill. She's pretty toxic to all but a very few members of her colleagues. And I don't think it's the message that they're gonna glom onto in 2022 and 2024.
Would you say Matt Gaetz is similar? in terms of how he's viewed?
Matt Gaetz, you know, Matt Gaetz is in Iowa today, right? He's in Iowa with Marjorie Taylor Greene. They have this tour going. So they have their adherents. And I don't want to downplay the impact that those people have, because they're the people that brought us Donald Trump. And they're the people that reelect people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz. Well, I guess only Matt Gaetz has been reelected. But what I'm saying is, in terms of what the party line is going to be about, you know, when more is written about what's going on in Afghanistan and the Taliban, I think they're going to find out that it's a message that doesn't really play very well with their base, supporting people who they went after for such a long time. But it is an opportunity to draw comparisons to both what happened with Black Lives Matter, which is a strong message among all Republicans when you hear them talking about the looters in Kabul, and I guess to a smaller fringe with the you know, the January 6th thing, seeing them in the presidential palace in Kabul saying that all Western governments have to come down. I don't think that's a string that runs through all the way through with most of the people.
Let me add one more wrinkle and see what you think. We talked earlier this week about some of Tucker Carlson's initial reaction to what was going on. And he went on at length about how this was inevitable because America, their fatal flaw, forget all the military stuff, the political stuff, making these people hate us and all that. It was that we tried to impose gender studies courses, and we liked the trans community and all of this like social stuff. And so he said that needs to be you have to force that on people at the point at the barrel of a gun, because they would never accept it otherwise. He seems to be missing the fact that the Taliban is coming in with guns. But in his like overall thesis, we were the bad guys because we tried to force these people to accept these lib values. And he never says the good guys are reclaiming, but clearly they don't agree with all of the stuff that us, the bad guys, were doing. So he is presenting them as being the ones with the appropriate values. So I think he should be on the fringe, but he has an audience of millions. He's one of the most watched people in cable news. Maybe he will abandon this. As you say, maybe it won't play. The idea that we should admire the values of these people, that perhaps something like a Taliban, but white and Christian, would work. Do you think that some of that might catch on if people with large followings like Tucker Carlson are trying to rewrite history in that way?
100% it will. I mean, he has a mouthpiece that is louder than that of even Lauren Boebert's Twitter or any of these others that we went through before. So his is more impactful because he is the most watched person in cable television. It's what makes that, you know, that rhetoric so dangerous, because it's very true that he will be, he will have an impact. And, you know, it should also be noted that, and it was a seldom, I hope the Turks reported it, but I don't know if they did because there's a lot to report every week, but the Republican Party dropped opposition to gay marriage last week as part of their platform. They still say that marriage is between a man and a woman, but they are no longer going to fight against gay marriage. And it was a small little piece, but then you hear Tucker Carlson, who is the mouthpiece for so many in the Republican Party and so many that adhere to what their platform is. And you hear him speaking in that way about the Taliban and about social issues and lib issues. It is political, it is wedge, but you also see what happens. They have to abandon them because they become much more popular. I don't think it's gonna have the same kind of impact.
Yeah, I get. I'm somewhat surprised that development did happen. Although it has seemed for the last year or so that the right has apparently figured out that open demonization of gay Americans is unacceptable. But I think we can still attack the trans community, and they've really turned to that. It satisfies, I think, the same craving on the right, while being a little bit more politically acceptable. Unfortunately, it's a tragedy that still is on the right. In any event, we are going to take our second break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the hypocrisy at Fox News about vaccines and masks. What are they saying versus what are they doing? And then the sight of just about the worst COVID outbreaks right now in the US is Florida. We're going to take a look there and see what's going on all after this. Anyway, thank you everybody for being back. Sorry, what were you saying?
You all look great. This is awesome.
Thank you.
It's a well-oiled machine.
Thank you. Well, behind the scenes it is. In front of the camera, it's a mess. But anyway, thank you everybody for being here. Before we jump back into the news, and there's a lot still to discuss, I want to let you know about a few things that are going on. First of all, every month we do a live Q&A for our tier 3 members on YouTube. That is coming up next Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time. So there is a post up already on the community tab. If you want to send in a question or a comment or anything like that for us to discuss, you can do that. We always appreciate it. There are a couple people who have been in like all the tier 3 Q&As that always put in a bunch of awesome questions. Also, the multicast for the Young Turks is now done on the Damage Report YouTube channel. So if you had previously been watching the live stream of the Young Turks on the Damage Report, that will no longer work, but it will still be freely playing at youtube.com/theyoungturks. You can go there 6 p.m. Eastern time, 3 p.m. Pacific time. You can watch every day. You don't need to be a member or subscribe or anything like that, although you should to get notifications. Also, as always, coming up after our program today will be Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie, joined by co-host Jordan Yule. The really chill guy himself is gonna be there. And Eric Gruner is gonna be on for debate. So that is coming up at youtube.com/indisputable TYT. After that, you can go to twitch.tv/TYT to watch reactions with Rayvana. That'll be coming up at 1 p.m. Pacific time. So a lot going on Twitch today, a lot to look forward to. And with that, let's jump back into the news. Fox News personalities on air have gone hard against basically anything that would stop you from getting COVID, but especially things like mask mandates, vaccination mandates, casual questions about whether they themselves are vaccinated. But behind the scenes, it's a slightly different picture. So Fox News is now asking all staffers to upload their vaccination status into its finance and HR system Workday. That was by August 17th. So supposedly everyone at Fox News has now disclosed to this system their vaccination status. The network says this is being done for space planning and contact tracing purposes in conjunction with DCD state city health and safety guidelines. Now, masks remain optional for Fox News staffers who have been vaccinated, but are strongly encouraged in public areas throughout the building. Employees are required to wear masks in control rooms, and all employees will be required to complete a daily health screening and to show either a work care go to work screening pass or the company's own Fox ClearPass, an internal vaccine passport system by which vaccinated employees are able to bypass the work care screening. Now, all of that seems to me to be a reasonable thing that you would do in a building that's gonna have hundreds of people working in. But basically every element of that, from the like strong encouragement of efforts to the mandates, are things that Fox has demonized for well over a year. Michael, what do you think about this?
I mean, it's again, hypocrisy has never come back to haunt Fox News, and here it's going on again, right? I mean, so they can show one thing out the front window, and then what's going on in the back room is totally different. And that has been a secret to their success for a long time. One thing that I found interesting is Sean Hannity several weeks ago said this. He said, please take COVID seriously. This was on the air. I can't say it enough. Enough people have died. We don't need any more death. Research like crazy. Talk to your doctor. I believe in science. I believe in the science of vaccination. And then just a day or so ago, he said, the science shows the vaccine will not necessarily protect you. It's not protecting many people. This is something that they have made a habit of doing for a very long time, sadly to their great success. But yeah. Are you surprised, John? I mean, I'm not surprised.
I mean, I might be a little bit surprised that even behind the scenes, they're taking it seriously. Yeah. But I guess, I mean, they are a corporation. They want their operations to continue.
No, I guess I meant, are you surprised that there is a divergence with what practicing what they preach?
I mean, only in that they would behind the scenes take it seriously. I initially, look, if you had asked me in the weeks running, like leading up to the pandemic, will Fox News like basically undergo a 16 plus month campaign to get as many of their viewers to die of COVID? I would have said, no, I hope not, but I would have been deadly wrong. Yeah. And not just on things like vaccine mandates or whatever, but literally, like Tucker Carlson got 1 week of credit for taking it more seriously than Sean Hannity. And then he did a hard turn. Previously, he'd been saying, of course masks work. Why would you imply that they're not? And then he started demonizing masks, saying there's no masks, there's no science to support it. He demonized social distancing. They have attacked every possible thing you could do to keep yourself safe. So that has still surprised me, the lengths to which they would go to leave people defenseless to this. I have been, we haven't talked about this in a long time. I have been continually surprised at how little regard they have for the lives of their viewers.
Yeah, and that's consistent, and that's what is so horrific about their hypocrisy, and their propensity for demonizing people who should not be demonized, even if they're wrong. Even if they are inaccurate or make a mistake, the immediate demonization has been something, you know, this fire the coach mentality that they've had for a long time, which all Americans have to a degree. But man, do they demonize people to great effect, and then they come back and they have almost their own agenda. Well, not almost, their own agenda based upon that demonization. What they think.
Yeah, and look, if it had been President Hillary Clinton, the fact that they would advise people to do things that would create chaos in the run up to an election, I would have been less surprised by that. It was that none of them seemed to, like, one would think Republicans are in control. Don't you want things to be going well? Why would you want a terrible pandemic with a massive death toll? That was perhaps the most surprising thing. But I'm gonna jump ahead here. And by the way, we'll be playing some of that video of Sean Hannity a little bit. I just want to jump ahead to tracking something. Media Matters has been looking at all of the COVID related and vaccine related content on Fox News. And obviously things are getting worse with every passing day. Case counts have been skyrocketing, hospitalizations are at record amounts, and we expect, well, deaths are already massively going up, but we are worried that they'll go up even more. And so to get to, you know, like, at will, is there any point where maybe they'll tone it down a little bit? Well, in a 6-week period from late June to just about a week ago, Media Matters found that nearly 60% of the network's vaccine segments included claims undermining or downplaying vaccinations. That is actually slightly higher than the 57% of their vaccine segments that did so from June 28th through to just July 11th. So it is seemingly trending even more suspicious towards vaccines as we launch into this Delta variant wave. And so I guess at some point, Michael, I can't speak for you, I can only speak for myself. I gotta stop being surprised by this stuff, but they keep finding ways to impress me with how little they care.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by that. I'm surprised by how little it matters. That's the thing that I keep being surprised about, right? I mean, Media Matters, right? Like, why doesn't this resonate with more people? Not it's always, they're always going to be the people that get on the cult ship, but why doesn't it resonate with more people who are not, you know, fully, you know, inscribed there? And that to me is the I'll never understand that.
Yeah, we're about to talk briefly about Ron DeSantis, and I was speaking on the show with Anna yesterday. It is one thing to like see Ron DeSantis saying, you don't need to do anything, don't worry, you don't need to worry about this, and being like, yes, Ron DeSantis. But then when it becomes devastating and people start dying in huge numbers, they still are, yeah, Ron DeSantis, like, I don't understand how he bet on it not being a serious thing. He was wrong, but it doesn't seem to matter that he was wrong. There doesn't seem to be any connection between the results of his actions to what people think about him. I could be wrong, maybe his approval rating has ticked down a little bit, but they haven't seemed to turn on him or on Abbott.
No, I mean, that's the thing, like, you make a calculation, and if the calculation is working, you go with what worked. And then also you look across the country to Gavin Newsom, who did shut down the country and who was super careful and is being recalled. Now, again, California is a very threshold for recall, but even if you are flying in the face of what is safe and healthy and responsible, if you are looking for power, and he certainly is, and this is working and you're not getting a chink in your armor, then, you know, that's what's going to push you forward.
Okay, we only have a few more minutes, but I do want to jump into this. So Sean Hannity, who we had previously briefly given some credit he didn't actually deserve for seeming to begin to take vaccines seriously, had Ron DeSantis on his show. And that care, I guess, has been blown away by the negative reaction that he got. So here is his most recent commentary about vaccines.
The science shows the vaccine will not necessarily protect you. It's not protecting many people. Governor, great to have you back.
Okay, so bit of an issue with that. There are obviously people who still get breakthrough cases and still end up in the hospital after being vaccinated. That is true. But the way he worded it, like, you would have to be so charitable to say that he's just being careless with his words. He seemed to imply that it isn't much protection at all, which is 100% not what we've seen from virtually any part of this pandemic since we've gotten the vaccine. So that's getting into sort of active misinformation that you would expect they would avoid. They tend to be kind of a little bit careful about the way they attack the vaccine. That seemed to go into the territory of stuff that gets like Marjorie Greene banned from Twitter. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's like an FCC violation. It's just simply not fact. And I don't know that it is an FCC violation, but it should be, because that is making something up. At its worst, it mitigates the effects of getting COVID if you do contract the virus and you're vaccinated. It's totally irresponsible. I'm sorry, less irresponsible was me teasing it before we got to it. But
that's totally cool.
But it is such a violation of the trust that used to exist between viewers and news. And this is really different, because this is just saying that they don't work, that we have to rethink them. They work like crazy, these vaccinations. They have slowed and halted a pandemic, and now people are not paying attention to them, and the unvaccinated are the victims of it. So it's really bad.
Yeah, we have this headline. It says about 99.999% of fully vaccinated Americans have not had a deadly COVID-19 breakthrough case, which that I don't know how much more need to be protected for Sean Hannity to be impressed. But let's turn to the other guy there. Ron DeSantis, of course, was there. Florida is being hit crazy hard. Let's jump to this little chart of what it looks like in terms of cases, hospitalizations, deaths. Here's Florida. That's the cases at the top. The deaths are moving back up towards the highest they've been. The hospitalization is already higher than it's ever been before. Here is a little bit of what he had to say after that vaccine misinformation from Sean Hannity.
He is obsessed with having the government force kindergartners to wear masks all day in school. In Florida, we believe that that's the parents' decision. Joe Biden thinks the federal government should come in and overrule the parents and force these young kids to wear these masks. And you gotta wonder, where are your priorities that you're so obsessed with this issue and so obsessed with taking away parents' rights, and you're letting Afghanistan burn, our border burn, and so many other things in our country?
Okay, so where are his priorities? Well, let's talk about Ron DeSantis' priorities, because of course he was saying that on Fox News, not surprisingly, because he's been on Fox a lot. In the first 6 months of this year, he's been on Hannity 8 times, Tucker Carlson 6 times, Laura Ingraham 7 times. He's only had 7 meetings with his lieutenant governor. He hasn't met one-on-one with the Surgeon General of Florida once. He has a lot of time for Fox. That seems to be his priority, Michael.
Yeah, and it's not surprising. He's going to have a lot more time for Fox in the next 2.5 years. I mean, this is, you know, where things are going for Ron DeSantis. And the callousness that he's displaying as governor is going to be tested nationally at some point. And that's what he's hoping happens, and that he's hoping he has success. But again, he did this at the beginning of the pandemic. He's doing it now. It's a civil liberties argument that he is saying that government is bad and government is not your friend. We are your friend. It's worked for him so far. His popularity has waned initially, but it's come back to a stable place.
Well, and super fast, we're running out of time, but after the first wave, which I thought Florida did terribly in, he got all this credit for having done well. If it gets really bad, is that finally gonna break through to the media to cover that he has been one of the main reasons that it hasn't worked?
Compared to other states, that's the thing. And those numbers were misinterpreted and misreported at that time too. Not that Florida wasn't having horrible numbers. Their percentages versus the percentages in other states were what wasn't being reported, and that matters.
Sure. Yeah, and a lot of people have already died. A lot of people are going to be dying in Florida in the coming weeks. We'll see if he takes a little bit of time to actually talk about and care about their concerns and not just whatever Sean Hannity brings up on his show. Anyway, if you're watching on our linear platforms, thank you very much. We are unfortunately out of time with our first hour. If you're on Twitch or YouTube, there is more coming. So short break, we'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.